Okay, everybody, good afternoon. Today is February 24th, Wednesday, February 24th, and we are here at United Orthodox Synagogues in Houston, Texas, for our Lunch and Learn in the Parsha HaShavua. And today's Parsha, this week's Parsha, is Parsha Ki Tisa, which starts off with this statement from God to Moshe as follows. We are on page 180. Page 180. By the Ber Hashem El Moshe Lemor, Ki Tisa et Rosh B'nei Yisrael Lifkudehem, V'natnu Ish Kofer Nafsho LaHashem Bifkodotam, V'lo Yevahem Negev Bifkodotam. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, when you take a census of the Israelite people according to their enrollment, each shall pay the Lord a ransom for himself on being enrolled, that no plague may come upon them through their being enrolled. Zeyitnu kol haover al hapikudim, machatzit hashekel b'shekel hakodesh. This is what everyone who is entered in the record shall pay. A half shekel by the sanctuary weight. Truma l'Hashem. I'm sorry. Machatzit hashekel b'shekel hakodesh, esrim geira hashekel. 20 geiras to the shekel, machatzit hashekel, truma l'Hashem. A half shekel by the sanctuary weight, 20 geiras to the shekel, half shekel as an offering to the Lord. Okay, so we may be familiar with this, that when the Jews were counted here, they were not counted, there was no head count, but instead everyone came and gave half a shekel, and they counted the half shekels, and that's how they knew how many people there were. Okay, there's a debate, which we're not going to get into, but it's just you should know it. There was a debate as to whether or not this requirement is an everlasting requirement, whether this is a mitzvah l'dorot, or it's a mitzvah l'sha'ah, whether this is a commandment just for this time, that the Jews cannot be counted, and therefore any time you want to count them, not just this time, but any time you want to count them, you have to do it in an indirect fashion, like this one, collecting half a shekel, and then counting the shekels. That's the opinion of Rashi, for example, and others. The Abarbanel has an essay at the beginning of this week's Parsha where he strenuously disagrees with Rashi and points out there are other times in the Torah where the Jews are counted, and there is no indication that they were counted through the collection of half shekel, which he says is proof that this was a one-shot deal.
Is this why you don't count people
at Minyan? This is a similar idea. Yes, similar idea. Okay. Now, although we do count them, we just don't use numbers, right? Okay. So, what I'd like to focus on today is the question of why half shekel, right? Why not just collect a shekel from everybody? Maybe it's a little bit easier. What?
A shekel, a lot of money at that time.
I know this. It's twice as much as half a shekel.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. And I only took one accounting class in college, and I figured that out by myself.
But was a half a shekel a coin? I mean, it was obviously a monetary unit.
Right.
You didn't have a computer.
So it's a half a shekel. Yeah, we say it's a coin, but here it's a certain amount of. It could be like a coin, which is weighted a certain amount, right? We say.
Could you have a family of four and give them two shekels, a half for each?
I think you have to give the actual half shekel coin. Okay, so. Why not a shekel? So there's a Gemara in the Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud, which sometimes we like to point out is misnamed the Jerusalem Talmud. It really should be called the Palestinian Talmud because it doesn't come from Jerusalem. At the rabbinic period, the Jews were in the north, in the Galilee. And that's where the Talmud was written. But Jerusalem is the center of Israel, so it became known as the Jerusalem Talmud. Anyway, says Rav, you don't have this in front of Rabbi Yuda v'Rabbi Nechemya, Chalamar lefi shechat'u b'machatzit hayom yitnu machatzit hashekel. His understanding is that the sin of the golden calf, which took place right before this, took place at midday. And these half shekel coins are supposed to come as some sort of expiation some sort of forgiveness tool for the sin of the golden calf. And so it's a symbolic connection. Just like they sinned at midday, give half a shekel. If they sinned when half the day had gone or come, they should give half a shekel. It's a strong symbolic connection. Another opinion is as follows. Rabbi Yehoshua bei Rabbi Nechemia b'shem Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai lefisha avru al aseret hadibrot yeh notein kol echad v'echad asara geira. Since they broke the Ten Commandments, and the now, since they broke the Ten Commandments when they worshiped the golden calf, they have to give 10 geira, right? How many, what's the weight of a full shekel, as we said? 20 geira, right? It says in the verse, right? Esrim geira, esrim, it says it in the Pasuk 13, Esrim Geira HaShekel. The shekel is 20 Geira, the weight of 20 Geira. And so you have to give half of that, half a shekel, which is 10 Geira, one Geira corresponding to each of the 10 commandments that they broke. Now, you may ask, if they worship the golden calf, what sin did they, what commandment did they violate? The first one and the second one, let's say. But what about the other eight? Why are they giving 10 geira? Why does the Gemara say that since they broke the 10 commandments when they worshiped the golden calf, they have to give something worth 10 geira?
There was a wild party.
What, right, but they only broke two of the 10.
No, there was sexual licentiousness at that time, wasn't there not?
All right, so I'll give you three. I'll give you three. I'll give you three. You still owe me seven.
Well, it wasn't because the first ones were broken. He threw them down. They broke, all 10 of them.
Moshe, right, he physically destroyed them, but the Jews only, it seems.
But because of them, he destroyed them.
Okay, could be. But that's not what the Gemara says. The Gemara says because the Jewish people violated the Ten Commandments, they have to give 10 geira. But according to, even if we take Scott's liberal interpretation, they only violated three.
Three made into ten, might as well have been 613.
Okay, so right, so.
They broke one.
Right, correct. You're correct that the Talmud says that when you violate the commandment of worshiping other gods, it's as if you broke all the commandments. Well, they only had 10 at that point.
Unless they were all.
So they only had 10, although unless they're all folded into that 10, but we're not going to. So okay. So that is the Gemara, and that's a very, very, those are very interesting symbolic interpretations as to what's going on here. Again, the first one is they sinned at midday, half day, so they have to give half a shekel, always a constant reminder of that sin. Or they broke the Ten Commandments via violating the first and the second, and therefore they have to give something which is weighted at 10 geira, one geira for each commandment.
Right, well, is this for every person or just men or over a certain age? Or was this?
So here the count is, here everyone is counted, it looks like.
So they say that in other places everyone's counted, but it's
important.
Everyone who's entered the
Beit HaMikdash
from the age of 20 years.
Yeah, correct. Yes. Thank you. 20 and up.
Oh, I didn't get that.
Okay. Okay. So, the Rav Moshe Alshich, I'll give you a little bit of his biographical information. Lived from 1508 to 1593. He was born in the Ottoman Empire in 1508 and died in Sfat in 1593. You can go visit his grave in the famous cemetery in Sfat. He was a Kabbalist, and he wrote a commentary on the Torah, which doesn't really which although he is a Kabbalist, his writing does not betray necessarily traces of Kabbalah. His Kabbalah was something which he kept to himself. He was a student of Rav Yosef Karo, who was the author of the Shulchan Aruch, and he is called the Al-Shich HaKadosh, the Holy One. Very few people have the word HaKadosh, the Holy One, amended, attached to their name, but he is one of them. There's the Shelah HaKadosh, the Ari HaKadosh, the Rachayim HaKadosh, which were all very important personalities, and he is one of them. Okay, and so he wrote a commentary on the Torah, and he is similar to Abarbanel in the sense that he begins each section of his commentary with a number of questions, which he sort of anticipates that the reader is going to have, and then he gives a summary of his view and concludes with an answer to all the questions. So he asks the following question on, despite what we said in the Yerushalmi, he's not satisfied, and he asks the following question. Why is it, right, he wants to know, again, the same question, that half shekel was collected instead of a whole shekel? Would it seem much easier to collect a whole shekel? And so he quotes Rav Shlomo Alkabitz, who was also a Kabbalist. He says as follows, Shehu, you don't have this. You do not have this in front of you. I'm reading this to you off a separate piece of paper. Shehu lahorot et bnei Yisrael yachas achdutam. That the half shekel was collected in order to illustrate to the Jewish people their connection to each other, right? Their relationship of unity or of brotherhood. Bal ya'ale alev ish mehem shehu nifrad mechavero, lest one think that they are separate from their neighbor. Ki'im ki'ilu kol echad chatzi. Really, every single person is only half. Ubehitchabro im kol echad ve'echad miYisrael na'aseh echad shalem. And by connecting yourself to every other Jewish person, you become complete. Al kein kol echad yavi machatzit. Therefore, everyone has to bring a half a shekel. So the Alshich, or Moshe Alshich, is saying that the half shekel is supposed to remind the Jewish people that on our own, each of us is incomplete, and we're really only complete, we're only full or perfect when we realize our relationship to our fellow Jews. And we connect to them, which is a very, very nice idea, right? Who could argue with that? Yes? Anyone want to argue with that? No. Except for what? What question might you have on this interpretation?
Is it transgender?
Is it transgender? That's a very, very 21st century question.
He's from another
table. Very transgender. I like it. Yes, the question that Alshich asks, and that others may ask too, is why is God decided to teach the Jewish people this lesson now? Right? Why did God teach this when they were leaving Egypt and ask everyone to give half a matzah or whatever they were doing?
Wasn't this count? Wasn't this like a census?
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
This was the time that they took the census.
So the question is, but God could have taken the census with a shekel. He took it with a half a shekel to teach them
no,
that
you
they're
said
all...
why now and not when right, they left Egypt.
Correct, but God could have counted them when they left Egypt, or he could have taught them the lesson of their reliance on each other some other time. Why did he choose this time to teach them the lesson that they are... united, and each Jew on their own is absent something unless they connect to others.
I know we have to, everybody wants to figure out everything in the Torah, understand it. But
Why does it have to be an understanding? Why can't it just be, okay, everybody threw a nickel or everybody threw a quarter?
But that's not what happened. God said everyone has to throw in a half a shekel.
Half a shekel was a unit of measurement. Just like a quarter is a unit of measurement. It doesn't mean a quarter is a fourth of a dollar. It just means it's a unit of measurement.
No, a quarter, the fact that we call it a quarter does make it, by definition, a quarter, a dime.
A coin. They said they could throw a stone in. It's just a coin.
But they didn't. That's exactly the point. They didn't. So why did they specifically use this?
So if they said throw a shekel in, that would be, then some commentary and study later and say, oh, we're all not, nobody else is born. We're good by ourselves.
I don't know, maybe, but that's not what happened.
Taking something of value?
That's not what happened.
Was he getting ready for them to go to Israel? He wanted them to know that they were
some reason. We have 38 years ahead of us?
Because what's happened is that they...
Well, actually, we don't know. That's a good point, actually. At this point, no, this is right after the sin of the golden calf. So at this point...
They were told they were.
I think they were divided after the...
Oh, no, this actually may be before that. That's a good point. This actually may be before that. And you're right. Marilyn's correct. They think they're about to enter the land of Israel. Maybe they're counting the soldiers. But still, the question still stands. This question still stands. I could have found out how many soldiers I had by using a shekel. So why half a shekel? So the Alshaf says, okay, half a shekel because we want every Jew to remember that they need each other and they're not complete without the other. So why teach that now? Why not teach that when they get into Israel? Why not teach that in a month from now? Why not teach that when they were leaving Egypt? You're right. I can understand why the counting was needed now. But besides the counting, there's something else going on here, an additional lesson. And why is that now? That's the question.
I would say that.
Okay.
A lot of heat. So when you are actually said, okay, now let's forget about it, let's unite and go.
Okay, you are right that there's a direct connection, according to the Alshich, between the decision to teach this lesson now and the golden calf. That's correct. So let's see what he says.
Could it be also that it's in preparation to the tent of meeting when the people are supposed to come together before Hashem?
They're getting ready to build the Mishkan, right? Okay, could be. But the Alshaf says something a little different. Let's see what he says. He says as follows. Because you have to remember, what's the half shekel for? The half shekel is a l'chaper al nafsho techem. Look at the end of verse 16. It's an expiation. It was, right? It was as some sort of attempt to attain forgiveness for the Jewish people, for the sin of the golden calf. Okay? So I have to ask you a question. What happened to the guilty people after the sin of the golden calf?
They got killed.
Right. The tribe of Levi went and killed some of them, and God killed some others. So who's left?
The good guys.
The innocent people. So if the innocent people are left, what is the... Another question is, what's the meaning of... You have to give a half a shekel as forgiveness for a sin that what?
You didn't commit. You didn't stop them, but you didn't stop them either.
It's easy to say that, but the truth is, you know, is that what we believe? Let's see. Okay, it's easy to say that, but not so easy to us, because I don't want to be. I don't know. Wasn't there a? Yesterday there was a school shooting somewhere.
No, there was just a shooting.
Right. I don't want to. Earlier this week there was a school shooting. I don't want to have to find forgiveness to pay a fine for that. Right. As soon as I said this, everyone said, "Oh, of course they have to pay because they didn't stop anybody."
What is that to do with me?
Why do I have to pay for a sin that I didn't do? It's a nice commentary on the Torah, but then when you apply it to your own life, you know, you're in the supermarket and you see a guy pulling a gun and you run away. So are you responsible? You didn't stop them. Why should I have to pay? Why should I have to pay?
Thank you.
So what about what I just said? So after the shooting's over, the police take the names of everyone who was in the store, and they say, okay, you have to now pay damages to the family of the wounded and the injured and the deceased because you didn't stop the guy. You would say, what are you talking about? I'm not paying anything. What about Kol Yishol Arim Zebazeh? Oh, it's a nice song. It's a really nice song. I like to teach it to my kids, but no, I'm not going to really pay, live by it, right? So let's see what the Yashav says.
But that soldier who died in the supermarket lived by it.
Almazeh nitchayvu Yisrael sheboto hador ish kofer nafsho l'Hashem. This is the Yashav saying. Why did the people in that generation have to pay the half shekel? Ki halo asher chatu be'edim uvahatra'a heimitu b'cherev b'nei Levi. Those who sinned, but were warned beforehand, and there were witnesses that they were sin that they sinned, they were killed by the tribe of Levi, who were God's zealots. V'asher lo b'hatra'a nifgam Hashem. And those who were not warned, God took care of them. V'asher shelo b'edim batkam Moshe kisotot. And some others, Moshe was able to do some sort of special procedure. And they were found guilty. So anyone who was guilty, whether they were witnesses or there were no witnesses, or they were warned, either tribe of Levi got them, Hashem got them, or Moshe got them. Okay. V'im Cain.
But wasn't it the Gentiles that followed the Jewish tribe? Weren't they the ones that did the...
Maybe not. But the point is, whoever was guilty was punished.
Now,
V'im Cain. A foe ma pisho hanisharim bahem shehu truchu latet kofer nafsham. What is the sin of these leftovers that they have to give a lechaper al nafshotechem, an expiation for their life? They didn't do anything wrong. All the guilty parties have already been punished. Ach, ein ze. Ki im al sherafu yidehem milimchot biyad asher chatu be'egel. You are all right. Why are they being punished? Because they remove their hands from trying to stop, or maybe even just protesting against those who were worshiping the sin, the egel. Now I don't think it's so simple. What the Al-Sheikh is saying here, because we have rabbinic commentary that say when Aaron tried to stop them, that they tried to kill him.
Yeah.
So, right, it's not so simple, but this is what the Al-Sheikh is saying, that they, maybe they didn't even, limchot could be to try to stop, it would also be to protest. Meaning, it's one thing to say, I'm not going to put my life on the line by physically getting between this person and the calf. But maybe you have at the very least, you have an obligation to verbally protest and say something's wrong here.
It's like breaking up a fight.
Right.
The crowd had the obligation to descend.
Right. So they didn't do it. Al haderech shenivaer lifnim. He said, I'll explain this later. Al kain. Kasher shava poit barach mehem ratza liz kotam. Now, after God's anger has dissipated, God wanted to give them some merit because they were on some way responsible. V'tachat ma she'al yidei ha'egel garmu siluk shchina me'ha'aretz. Because the sin of the golden calf caused God's presence to retreat from the world. Atayit nu kofer nafsham lasot adnei ha'mishkan li'aseid otau. Bahem batim li yidot hakrashim. So God gave the opportunity for the people to give a half a shekel, which was going to be used to make the fasteners that were used to hold the boards of the Mishkan in place. What was the point of the Mishkan? To bring God's presence back into the world. So the sin of the golden calf caused God's presence to exit, and God was giving them a chance. Through the giving of this half shekel, which was going to be then melted down to build these fasteners to help in the building of something that was going to bring God's presence back to the world. So we've answered some of our questions. Half a shekel was to show that no Jew is really an island and everyone is connected to the other. Why did God have to use that now? So now we could answer, why was God teaching that lesson now? Because this is when the lesson needed to be taught, so that people would not think, oh, they were the guilty ones. I saw it all happening, but I didn't actively participate, so I'm innocent. No, no. Really, you're also responsible on some level. Not guilty, but responsible on some level. And so therefore, you also need to do something to find atonement. Not only are you going to find atonement, but you're also going to be able to undo the outcome of the sin of the golden calf. The outcome of the sin of the golden calf was God removing his presence. And through your actions, you're going to participate in building the Mishkan, which is going to bring back the divine presence.
Is there any commentary as to, I mean, I guess after seeing people get killed after the golden calf, and then they receive this commandment that people would do it and that people would not refrain from giving?
Well, they didn't refrain from giving. There's no indication that they refrained from giving.
So that's what I mean. There's no indication that happened.
Correct.
You know, people basically did.
Correct. They did it. Yes, right. Yeah.
If you accept his explanation, I think there's a danger. Because that tells me I see somebody eating a cheeseburger, I got to go up to them and tell them they're not good, so they're not dressed properly. And what their definition of dress?
Correct. Right. It raises a very good question. Let's get to the specifics in a moment. But before we do that, I want to see something from Abraham Joshua Heschel. Right, the topic of the classes I sent out was few are guilty, all are responsible, lessons from Moshe Alshich and Heschel. So we see what Moshe Alshich wrote. Now, you have on the bottom of page one, this is from the beginning of Heschel's book on the prophets. He wrote a lot of things, but his doctoral thesis for the University of Berlin was this book, which he wrote in German, which I translated to English for you here. Or I actually just photocopied the English translation for you. I could have done it, of course, but it was someone else already did it. Okay, so he's talking about the nature of a prophet, right? And for example, he writes... Oh, I think I didn't give you... Hold on one second. So here, Heschel is talking about the nature of a prophet. And so on the bottom of the page that you do have, it says, "For there is no man who does not sin. Surely there is not a righteous man on earth who does good and never sins. It is with a bitter sense of the tremendous contrast between God's righteousness and man's failure that the psalmist prays, 'Enter not into judgment with thy servant, for no man living is righteous before thee.'" And then he continues, which you don't have. "Men are greatly praised when worthy of being reproved. Only a strong heart can bear bitter invectives." Meaning, the prophets seem to blame everyone for everything. Right, there's no one who's innocent. They, with a very broad stroke, the prophets will often include everyone in their complaints. So what's the prophet trying to teach by doing that? Right. So he says as follows: "Above all, the prophets remind us of the moral state of a people. And here it is: few are guilty, but all are responsible." And then he says the following: "If we admit that the individual is in some measure conditioned or affected by the spirit of society, an individual's crime discloses society's corruption." That's a very powerful line, right? An individual's crime discloses society's corruption. If, right, no person is an island, and so if someone does something, it must, may, does, take your pick, reflect something wrong in the society. In a community not indifferent to suffering, uncompromisingly impatient with cruelty and falsehood, continually concerned for God and every man, crime would be infrequent rather than common. Right? If there was an outcry, a society-wide outcry, then when certain crimes happen or crimes happen, right, crime would be infrequent. We see that sometimes, that when there's a certain things become unacceptable in society, when there is a complete outcry that that type of activity is unacceptable, right? Now we're going through a time in, let's say, the college campuses are dealing with sexual harassment and things like that, right? So these things will eventually become unacceptable when society as a whole says we're not going to, right? What's that movie? We're angry. What's that? We're angry as hell. And we're not going to take it anymore. Right? That's the type of thing Heschel is saying. And that's, I think, what the Alshich is saying. Right? He writes in his commentary, Al-Kain, Ramaz Lanu Yitbarach, Ki Kol Ish Miyisrael, Nafsho Kishura B'chaviro. Every single person is tied up with every other person. That's what makes a society. So one person's misbehavior may be a window into the society. Heschel deals with this again in the next article that I gave you two pages of it. You can read it on your own. This is a famous case from the Vietnam War. This guy, Captain Cali, was in charge of a group of soldiers. This was what the My Ling Massacre. 500 people, I think, men, women, and children. Right, my lie, right. We're killed by this, not all by him, but a lot him and his soldiers.
He was the one in control.
Right.
He was the
commanding officer. He was sentenced to life imprisonment, and then the President Nixon changed it from life imprisonment to house arrest on his base, and then eventually commuted it entirely. And there's I did some reading on it this morning. It's a pretty fascinating case. Anyway, so you can imagine now knowing what Heschel wrote about the prophets, how Heschel responds to this, that if this guy can pull this off, right, it's a reflection. If this guy could do this crime, it's a reflection on us. And he makes the point explicitly on the next page, he writes sort of in the middle, at this hour, a major lesson implied in the teaching of the ancient prophets of Israel assumes renewed validity. Few are guilty, but all are responsible. It is important that we distinguish between guilt and responsibility. It is dangerous to confuse these two distinct terms. Guilt, which originally denoted a crime or a sin, implies a connection with or involvement in a misdeed of a grave or serious character. The fact of having committed a breach of conduct, especially such as violates laws and involves penalty. Responsibility is the capability of being called upon to answer or to make amends to someone for something without necessarily being directly connected with it or involved in a criminal act. And that's what he is suggesting. If you read the rest of the essay, he says at the time of reckoning for the American society, he was opposed to Vietnam in general. And when a lot of the atrocities started being reported from Vietnam, this is why he was opposed to it, and said that we can't just, of course, the soldiers who did it are guilty, but we are responsible if we have this notion he says when he writes in the prophets that the individual is in some measure conditioned or affected by the spirit of society. And it could be that's sort of, I don't think that's exactly what the Alshich is saying, but something similar, that the people there didn't protest. And if they didn't protest, the people who were doing it must have thought, well, this is okay. This is okay. And so everyone bears some sort of responsibility, which Heschel says we have to distinguish from guilt. Guilt is when you're directly involved. Responsibility is when you have something where he writes, right, you have some answers. We have to make amends for something that you may not have been directly involved in. And so now that answers all of our questions. half a shekel to remind us that we're all part and parcel of each other's society. And that lesson had to be taught at this moment, lest any of the people who did not participate, but who also did not protest, think that they are completely innocent. They're not completely innocent. They may be guiltless, but they still bear some responsibility for allowing this to fester. With and again, the fact that they didn't protest would indicate to the actual criminals that what they were doing is okay. So that is an explanation of the need for half a shekel.